Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for joining us here on the program. We come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We also archive at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. We stream live from that location as well. And we also link to our guests. We'll be giving you our guest website in just a few moments, and we encourage you to, as I always say every week, go to their website, check out what they have to offer, whether it be just basic information. Maybe they have a book or a CD or some type of coursework, classes, webinars, all kinds of different things that are available today that just weren't years ago when I started doing this kind of programming. And we're talking nearly 40 years ago, prior to the harmonic convergence and all of the other astronomical and astrological and metaphysical spiritual types of things that we started to learn about, chakras and energy and different dimensions in the world and past lives, future lives, life between lives. It's unbelievable the list of different subjects that we have covered on this program. One of these days, maybe I'll sit down and go through the 500 or 600 interviews that we've done on this particular program and try to put them all together in different categories. Maybe I'll let you do that. I'll let you do that, and you can look through everything. And again, find what works for you. Find what resonates with you. That's really kind of the bottom line. Our program today is, I think, going to be a lot of fun for you and for me. It is not often that we have the opportunity to have some type of a compass, if you will, for our lives. And again, as with every guest we have on the program, this just happens to be our guest's perspective. It's something that is being offered to you. And again, check it out. See how it resonates with you. We're going to find out more as we talk with the author of The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. My guest is the author. She's also, if I am correct, and if I have the right term right, a clairvoyant, Ellen Tadd. And Ellen, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be with you.
So what can you tell me? No. What do you know? This is interesting because when I was growing up, we used to hear the phrase that there is no manual coming into this world. We don't come in with a book in our pockets. We don't even come in with pockets. And we have to kind of figure it out on our own. And yet, as I have been doing these programs and learning, actually since the age of 17, really involved in my official search, if you will, and the various people that I've come across, there is a manual, there is a guidebook, as it were, but we have to write it for ourselves. Is that a fair assessment?
gee, that's an interesting question. In my book, I emphasize two fundamental skills. The skill of deep listening, which you can call meditation, but you don't have to be sitting in a lotus position to be in the state of deep listening. And also deep focus. And I find that when people develop these skills of deep listening and deep focus, then they're able to access a part of themselves, their essential enlightened self, their spirit, and then there is a guidebook. But without deep listening and deep focus, I perceive that people usually are so affected by the cultural conditioning that there can be a lot of confusion.
We've heard, again, there are so many tools out there available, and you really do go through just about every one of them that we've talked about at length on many occasions on this program. One in particular dealing with our guides, another dealing with the question or questions that we always want the answer to but can never really quite. Even if we get the answer from someone, it's still never quite enough. or we forget. You know, it's like, well, I got to ask somebody else now because that person told me this and this person may give me a different answer, which actually might really be true. You also talk about the issues, the various aspects of who and what we are in terms of the third eye, consciousness, as well as certain philosophical perspectives. One in particular, you know, positivity, as well as, you know, you're already talking about asking and listening, as well as two sort of diametrically opposed forces or, I don't know, elements, fear and desire. As well as some other elements here. And I love chapter 11. I don't know. That probably could have been a very short chapter, other than the fact that if people don't know what the word means or how it is used, attunement seems pretty self-explanatory if people have been listening to this program. But for those who haven't, and there are a lot who haven't, I'm sure, they're trying to understand. One of the elements I want to dive into right away, and you talk about this aspect of listening. You've used a couple of terms, and you also use one term in particular, a three-letter word that I'm hearing some blowback on because of the fact that that's more of a physiological response, if you will, to say a question. I know about kinesiology as well in terms of, you know, muscle testing, things like that. And I want to talk about intuition, that still small voice. And is that the same thing as the gut feeling, if you will, that you're talking about in the infinite view?
Well, I tend actually not to use the word intuition because to me it's too nebulous. And in my book, I write about helping people really learn where guidance comes from, whether it comes from deep within them, whether it comes from a guide over their shoulder, whether it comes from a more universal oneness or source. And so I really am very interested in accuracy. And so you know, I was raised by my father, who is a physicist. I grew up in a scientific household, and I see my life as my own laboratory. And so when I realized that I had a natural clairvoyance and clairaudience, I was very methodical about it and very interested in approaching this in a way that I could then reproduce and also teach to others. In my book, I talk about the chakra system, but I really didn't read books on them. I just used my clairvoyance to watch them. And I wrote a little book called The Wisdom of the Chakras based on my conclusions. Mm-hmm. So the process of experiential knowing is something that I really encourage. And I teach certain tools and techniques because I think we don't feel certainty unless we have our own direct experience. So I never want someone to believe me, but I do like to help facilitate direct experiences for others.
Well, I know that in my interview with Greg Braden several years ago, he had written a book called The Spontaneous Healing of Belief. He talked about, and you sort of just alluded to it, he talked about our transition, sort of our evolutionary process from the phase of believing, moving into a phase of knowing that you just know. Now, there's a part of that that already exists today, and you're talking about experiential knowing, but I think it still applies, and that is that I can't challenge you on your clairvoyance or clairaudience. If you say that's what you are, that's talent, that skill, that ability, that capacity, who am I to argue? I don't have any tests that I can put you through, you know, from my perspective. And this kind of goes to where I want to lead with this, and that is the juxtaposition between science, because you mentioned your father and growing up learning and being exposed to physics, and the more spiritual or esoteric concepts or constructs of the clairvoyant, clairaudient. Can you help us to understand, from your perspective, the connectedness of the two? How are they connected, as opposed to a lot of the more fundamentalist, I don't even want to say logical, because logic would dictate, from my perspective, that yes, that it is possible. The non-logical, if you will, perspective, that where someone is tied into their belief system, that this, no, science and spirituality, separate, totally separate.
Well, first of all, my father was a theoretical physicist, and I learned from him that scientists really just have theories, and that they then go about trying to prove theories, and very commonly certain ideas that are considered established end up getting disproven. So science is not a fixed way of knowing what truth is. And physics is studying the nature of physical reality, and metaphysics is studying the nature of spiritual reality. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not interested in trying to convince anyone. You know, I've been doing my work for 40 years, and I've worked with thousands and thousands of people. And what I'm interested in is what is helpful. And so I've written this book to share what I've been teaching for a very long time, and have found it to be extremely helpful to my students. And so now I'd like to offer it to a wider audience. But I'm certainly not interested in trying to prove myself, but I do see that our world is in a struggling phase. Mm-hmm. And many people are suffering, and many people are asking deep and fundamental questions. What's life about? Why is this happening to me? And these were the kinds of questions I was asking when I was a teenager. I grew up with a mother who had a severe case of MS. And I was asking, why? Why is my mother sick? And it wasn't until I was 19 that she came back and talked to me after she died. And she said she had chosen a difficult life to learn compassion for those who suffer. And she said, no matter how things appear, if you look deeply, you will see there are reasons and there is justice. And so I set about learning, what does it mean to look deeply? What does it mean to access the depth of understanding that helps us to understand who we are and what life is about? And so I've always been driven by the fundamental questions, and this has motivated me. You know, clairvoyance is simply seeing faster moving energy. I have a visionary ability. You know, I didn't even work to develop it. It just presented itself to me very quickly. So I end up seeing things in my mind's eye and sometimes appear outside that give me knowledge and information. And I then started to scrutinize the process so I could help other people learn these skills. So it's really very simply about how do we expand our perception. You know, when a person walks in the room and a group of people turn to look at that person, everyone is perceiving in varying degrees. And part of what I teach is how to deepen our perception of ourselves and others.
Part of what we talk about in this program is doing just that, in the context of the metaphor of a circle. An event is taking place in the center of the circle. And my suggestion to everyone is to move around that circle to the different points to get different perspectives before making a decision or coming to any kind of a conclusion about that event, because quite honestly, we there's an old saying, I guess, of sorts, that if there's a car accident and you have 10 people, you're going to have 10 different perspectives or different stories about that accident. And the more points on the circle that we can view that event from, again, the better our understanding of that event and our role in it as well. And so we're just, and that's the reason why we have folks like yourself and on the program to share your point on the circle, as it were. I've heard it said, Ellen, I've heard it said that, and you sort of alluded to this aspect when you referred to your mother coming and talking with you, that we, you and I, and those listening, those who are here now on this earth, we are all considered by those, I'm not even sure what the term is, in, shall we say, the spiritual hierarchy, we're considered heroes because we're here at this time in these very challenging, in this very challenging period. Do you tend to agree with that?
Well, I don't know if I would use the word heroes. I would say that it's a courageous act to be born into the material world. In my book, I tell the story of watching my son incarnate. And I met him in etheric form before he was born. And then his etheric form dissolved and a beam of white light entered the new child, my baby. And then in a couple hours, he was born. And I felt in that moment that it actually seemed like a more courageous act to be born than actually to die, because when we're born, we go from a very expansive realm into a quite limited body. So I do feel that there's an element of courage, but, you know, not everyone wants to come back to the earth, and still they must. So, it's part of what I see, in that I recognize there is life before birth and life after death.
When we start taking a look at the events around us, once we come into this world, I mean, and we're talking really, again, about perspective. I mean, you talk about the infinite view. I remember and what just springs to mind is a section in a book, Autobiography of a Yogi, where his guru slapped him on the chest and he was given basically omnipresent or omniscient view of the world, 360 degrees. He was aware of everything that was going on around him without any judgment and so forth. It was just as an observer. Do you feel that we need to develop that ability, not to have the 360 perspective per se, but to develop a higher perspective, so to speak, to try to see things? Well, I guess the best analogy I could use is as if we were a drone flying over the event, not getting enmeshed in all of the emotional entanglements.
Well, I love to quote my son when he was in high school. He said, "The human condition from the human perspective is a tragedy. The human condition from the spiritual perspective is really interesting." And when we are able to have this more expanded perspective, then it's much easier to understand why things are as they are. So I think the benefit is that it can create peace where there was turmoil. There can become clarity where there's confusion. It adds a deeper understanding. And again, the process of trying to understand all of this intellectually doesn't really do it justice. That with a deep meditation, with the activation of the third eye chakra, which is the center of a spiritual perspective, people start to change their perceptions. And I love the phrase, perception informs feeling and feeling informs action. And we have a tendency, as you were talking, to perceive through the lens of our own issues. Mm-hmm. And I find that if the meditation and the third eye get cultivated, we get more objective.
I ask you to sort of analyze this perspective. And it took me a long time to get to this place, especially after I was drawn in, sucked into the whole process that took place during the 2015-2016 campaign cycle. I was totally devoid of it until about August or September 2016. And then for whatever reason, I just got sucked into this thing. And I couldn't believe the emotions that were churning through me. But I came to a place this year, 2017, and it was hard to say at first, but I can say it with some ease now, that when I look at the participants in this particular play, as I'll call it, you know, the world is a stage and we're all players and so forth, as Shakespeare would say, I began to see it from a different perspective. And actually, I had maybe a sense of empathy, if not pity, for the participants, those who won as well as those who lost, and realized that they were not the example that I wanted to pattern my life after. And so I had to thank them for being the teacher. And that was a hard thing to say because of the angst that I had in the latter part of 2016. But I get to 2017 and I'm going, you know, I can't live like this anymore. This emotion is going to destroy me physically. And so I changed that perspective again to acknowledging them as a teacher. Is this a perspective, or am I still, if you will, stuck in that human observation of the human condition as opposed to the spiritual observation of a human condition?
Did you get an opportunity to read the Third Eye chapter? Because that's so important to this conversation.
Well, let's talk about that. The Third Eye, which resides, and it's something that a lot of people are not aware of. And I know this is also, there's also a connection as well to the energy centers as well. But let's talk about that.
Okay, so I spent a long time, a couple of decades, being what I call a chakra watcher. I just used my clairvoyance. I didn't read books on the subject. I just watched people's chakras. And I learned a lot. And one of the fundamental things I learned was that as people move through their life, they're focused in a variety of different places. Some people are more predominantly focused in the gut. Other people are more predominantly focused on the analytical mind. And some people are deeply focused out of the middle of their forehead. And of course, we shift in and out. So it's not always, you know, the same. Sometimes a person is in the gut and sometimes a person focuses in the third eye. But what I found is that people who live their life focused in the gut tend to be attached to how they want things to be. And if they don't get what they want, they're sad or mad or hurt. And it is also the center of harmony. And harmony defined in the solar plexus is how we want things to be. If we get what we want, we feel harmony. And if we don't get what we want, we don't feel harmony. So living in the solar plexus, I've observed, tends to create a self-centeredness. And as I look at people in our country and everyone voted, I'm always very interested in where people are focused because that affects their perception. The analytical mind is great to have developed. It's like having a fast computer, and it's wonderful to have a fast computer, but I don't want my computer to tell me who to vote for. Mm-hmm. Because the analytical mind is not the same as wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to see the far-reaching impact. And wisdom is associated with the third eye chakra. And the third eye chakra is activated through focus and concentration alone. So after observing this for many, many years, I started working with my clients and had them look at a situation from the gut and then from the third eye and compare perception. And it was radical. People who were anxious in the solar plexus were calm in the third eye. People who made one kind of decision in the gut made a different decision in the third eye. The third eye gave an objective clarity and was able to see far-reaching impact. And so as far as our election goes, we are a solar plexus dominant culture. Most people live in their gut. And I see that the problems that come from this habit are many. The solar plexus is responsible for addiction. It's responsible, whether addiction is drugs or food or alcohol. It's all an emotional solar plexus problem. And when the solar plexus gets healed, it's not so challenging to change, but habits can be hard to break. And so I'm really working to help people understand the power of focus and concentration. My guides and teachers say focus and concentration is equal to power because it gives us clarity. So for me, as I look at our election cycle, I'm looking at people's energy centers and seeing we've got a big problem because we're a solar plexus dominant culture.
Interesting. Well, now, are you aware of any cultures down through human history who have been focused and been living more from the third eye chakra as opposed to the gut?
Well, what's interesting to me is, you know, I can watch energy centers even on a movie or on television, and I was watching a documentary about the Depression, and people were not so solar plexus dominant because there was more of a focus on we have to pull together to survive. And during World War II, we have to pull together to survive. So I felt there that people were more doing their duty, doing that which they felt they must. And because of that, sometimes when people are in a crisis, they get focused out of necessity in order to survive. And then, I mean, I'm a product of the 60s, but as I started watching movies in the 60s, I think a lot of us observed our parents going, well, I'm not just going to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to do what I feel. And so there became a real swing from focusing on duty, like, you know, working in a factory for a whole lifetime or you know, going to war or focusing on the family. And so this idea of, well, I'm going to follow what I feel, actually moved people more into the gut. And what my guides and teachers tell me is they say, do not serve yourself, do not serve others, serve the oneness of which we are a part. And so we've become so individualistic that we're missing the importance of understanding interconnection. And this is what nature is trying to teach us, that pollution in China doesn't stay in China. No. We're all one earth. We're all interconnected. And if we make our decisions based on our own emotional gut desires without a broader understanding, then we're just going to keep destroying the world.
And we can't force others to accept or adopt this philosophy.
No, but I can tell you, I've taught thousands and thousands of people how to use their third eye, and they like it because they feel better about themselves. They like being wise. They like not being so vulnerable to feeling emotional turmoil or anger. You know, I gave a lecture to a group of people, and there was a sweet high school boy who came up after I had taught the TAD technique, which is the comparison of the gut with the third eye. And he came up to me. He had, you know, pants that were baggy and his underwear was sticking out. And he said, when I was in my third eye, I wasn't angry. And he said it over and over again.
Wow. That is a remarkable thing and something that we all could benefit from. And I did not ask you this at the front end of the program or prior to our starting here. Is there some information we can share when we come back from break in regards to this this TAD technique or process of comparing the gut in that respect to I don't I'd use the right word here, the third eye experience that we can kind of share on this program today?
Yes, I can walk you through the exercise.
Wonderful. We'll come back and do that because I'm just extremely grateful for the opportunity because, again, we can use all the help we can get, I'll be honest with you. And I look at the things that are going on, not just in this country, but around the world, and I'm in agreement with you as well that we are all connected and that you're right, as you've it's clearly stated, you know, the pollution in China doesn't stay there. The radioactivity from the Nukushima power plant that was overrun by salt water several years back during the tsunami is not exclusively there. It has drifted across to the U.S. It's affecting the food supplies. All of these things, these different things, they impact us. And we're going to talk more about that as we continue talking with my guest. And I'm very grateful that she has taken so much time to share with us here on the program. My guest, Ellen Tad, and she has the book, The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. We'll be giving you her website shortly. We'll also tell you about some of the other books that she has, obviously available at her website. And we encourage you to stay tuned here on Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world. Don't go away.
Stories, I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Ellen Tad, and we are talking about the infinite view. In particular, we're talking about getting a better, actually a different perspective, a higher perspective, both literally and figuratively, in terms of our lives, not necessarily the events, but, you know, that can work as well. And we're going to have Ellen take us through this process. Now, the name of this is the TAD technique. Is that it? Give me the proper term.
Yes, that's right. Actually, a friend of mine named it.
Okay. Well, if you created it, you ought to be able to name it, right?
Yeah, I'm glad he named it in honor of me. So let me walk you through this. So this is an exercise that deals with the comparison of perception between the gut, the solar plexus chakra, and the third eye chakra in the middle of the forehead. So if your listeners can close their eyes, that would be best. If not, well, then I guess they'll have to do this with their eyes opened. But close your eyes and focus your attention in the gut. The gut is the area in your body where you feel butterflies when you're nervous. It's above the navel. And as you focus in the gut, I'd like you to imagine yourself late for an important appointment, an appointment that is important to you. And while you're focused in the gut, be aware of what you feel and what you do. And Richard, with your eyes closed, tell us, what do you feel and what do you do when you're focused in your gut?
Tension?
Mm-hmm.
An uneasiness.
Yes. An anxiousness about mm-hmm. being, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I want you to tap the point in the middle of your forehead so you know where to aim. Now, the third eye is not located between the brows. It is right smack in the middle of the forehead. So tap that point. Just for a moment, so you know where to aim, okay? Sometimes I tell people, put a little spit there, so you know where to aim. Okay, that's good. Now, with your eyes closed, envision a round window and look right out of your forehead. Gently pressure your focus out of the middle of your forehead. And as you do that, make sure all of your focus is up. Don't have the rubber band effect where you're partly in the gut and partly in the third eye. Bring all your focus up and really look right out of your forehead. As you look out of your forehead, imagine the same scenario. You're late for the same appointment, but this time you're focused out of the middle of your forehead. Hold your focus, don't let it drop. And tell me, what do you feel and what do you do? What changes?
There's almost a sense of a detachment from it in that I don't care that I'm late. Not that I don't care that I'm late and that I've put people off, what have you, but that in the grand scheme of things, it's not that important.
Exactly. In the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal. So it's not that you're going to be irresponsible. It's that you're going to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Put it into a proper perspective and get there when you can, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what wisdom right there. You're seeing the bigger perspective, and that bigger perspective antidotes the anxiety.
Hmm. Now, what I have found too, to sort of, how do I put this? Avoid these kinds of gut level feelings. And I'm going to use your example of being late for an appointment, is that I do everything that I can to make sure that I allow all kinds of time so I don't have to even concern myself with it. So I actually have a sort of a preemptive, if you will, a process. And it's the same thing with other situations where I don't want to have to be dealing with the drama and the trauma of whatever it might be. And it's so I, you know, I work to try to, for example, with the radio station I work for or that I have worked for in the past, I never like to tell people no. When they come to me and have a request, I never like to say no. So I've come up with a technique.
It's very wise of you to plan ahead and to work to not be late. But as we all know, sometimes we're in a traffic jam or sometimes technology fails us. Mm-hmm. And so the process, I mean, this is just one little example.
Right, right.
But what I've found is that the third eye helps us to stay calm and also helps us discern priorities and to make wise decisions.
Mm. And that's sort of the key in that respect is the guidance that is given through that process. Now, I use the word intuition, okay, but it would still apply here. And I often encourage people, you know, you need to listen, but it doesn't do any good to listen if you're not going to follow the promptings. And so I facetiously say that if you're not going to follow the promptings, then don't listen. However, it never goes away. It never goes away because I had an experience where I was prompted to carry out this particular task, if you will, and I went off on my own, and eventually I turned around, went back the other way to fulfill the prompting. And I don't know what it was that I did or didn't avoid. All I know is that if I hadn't done that, it wouldn't have been as good a day as it actually turned out to be. And I find that that's what's so fascinating about following the guidance. You know, and again, you talk about this in your book about the guides. And we don't just have one, do we? We have multiple guides, don't we?
Well, I always say that it's like having friends. You know, you can have a friend for life or you can have friends come and go. I mean, you know, there are a lot of entities that exist in the spiritual world, and so each person has a different story about who works for them and whether it's one person or many people. But it's very common to have more than one. And you know, your story about following that inner prompting is a great story, and it's great that you followed it. And then, of course, I have the curiosity, which is, where did the prompting come from? And when I look at it, I see it as guidance that was around you versus a prompting that came from deep within you.
And the only way for us to really know that is to go through this process, the TAD technique?
Well, I tell people, pay attention to where the thought and the feeling is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It has a direction. It can come from within you, like a fountain that erupts, or it can feel like it's coming to you. You can actually feel quality differences between the different possibilities of where the information can come from.
Hmm. You know, it is extremely important to know where. I mean, you're really making a very clear differentiation between these two aspects. What I talk about is the intuition, and what you talk about is the third eye and that guidance. And so learning something new here today, folks, that, you know, I think that what you're saying, Ellen, is that I need to, and we all need to better differentiate. All right. It may not be. And then again, that prompting, that may have actually been from the gut. But I always but my feeling at the time was this was just a prompting. I didn't. I suppose at that point where I decided to turn around, I suppose I did have that angst. So that would have been more of a gut. But why in the world would my gut tell me to turn around and go back the other way?
When we're in the gut, we become psychic sponges.
Okay.
So when we're in the gut, we actually, it's very common for people to absorb the feelings of others or absorb the energy of what's going on in the environment. So we actually can get a lot of information if we're focused in the gut. The analogy I use is if you're walking down the street with your eyes closed and feeling your way, you're going to learn a lot. But if you walk down the street and open your eyes, then you use your feelings selectively, and therefore it's less dangerous and less confusing. So it's not that the gut isn't involved in the process of perception, but the third eye should guide it. And so what I mean, I've had a lot of clients and they've been my teachers, and I've learned that there are a lot of people who say, well, my intuition, for example, says, you know, my boyfriend who left me is coming back. And the question is, are they accurate or inaccurate? And I use these terms, I call it the bing and the thud. So accuracy resonates and inaccuracy doesn't. It falls flat. And so what I try to facilitate is a level of learning to listen that helps people learn what I call the language of spirit, which is the language of subtlety. It's the language of vibration, where we can hear that, you know, when this one client said, I know my boyfriend's coming back, I heard a thud. He's not coming back. It's your wishful thinking. Mm. And time proved out that he didn't. So, you know, time is a wonderful feedback mechanism that gives us confirmation. And I'm always looking. I have what I call my imaginary shelf, where when I have a very strong vision or a voice or some very strong impression and life hasn't confirmed it yet, I put it on my shelf. And I have found, you know, through paying attention to the confirmations of life, I have learned to hone my accuracy.
Hmm. You make me think of an event that I was involved in many years ago with some buddies of mine. We were part of a men's group I'd started, and we decided to go hiking one day, and we ended up being out there very late at night, and all we had was like a sliver to a quarter of a moon shining overhead, and we were walking along a creek bed, and it was pretty darn dark. And this, I don't know, maybe this is appropriate, but we didn't trip over a single rock from the time the sun went down until we got back to the car. And we were walking in the dark in that little moonlight for, it had to have been 2 or 3 hours. Hmm. We went back a couple of weeks later in the morning and couldn't keep from tripping over the rocks. That's what came to my mind when you said that about walking down the street with your eyes closed versus your eyes open. Very, very interesting. I'm quite intrigued by all of this, and you know, it's funny how when I'm talking with folks such as yourself, I'm trying to glean everything that I can to live a better life, and yet I struggle just like everybody else. You know, I'm no different than anybody else. And I'm trying to figure out the answers to the great questions of the universe. Who are we and why are we here and where are we going and all of those kinds of things. And when I was probably in my mid-late 30s, I finally gave up all of those silly questions that I would go to intuitives or psychics and ask the questions about relationship and money and jobs. It's like I got to the point where I thought, you know, this just really is not it's not that important. It really isn't. And I'm curious from your perspective, and the perspective of the infinite view, as you have put the title on the book, which, folks, the subtitle is A Guidebook for Life on Earth. What is, if it's possible to say, what is the most important, or what is important, what should be important to us in this life as we live?
Well, I think the fundamental question of why am I here? What's my purpose? And this is different for each of us. And I think that when we have a greater clarity about why we're here, it informs our choices. I see life in the material world as our school, and my guides and teachers say we're here to learn, we're here to contribute, and we're here to enjoy. And what are we here to learn? Well, I've been taught that everyone has a spirit, a soul, and a personality. And the spirit is a spark of the God force that exists in each of us. It's our enlightened self. And then the soul is the container of the spirit that allows us to have individuality. And the soul is very complicated. It contains all of our past life patterns, traumas, talents, and skills, and it's evolving. And so when we incarnate, we're guided towards parents and circumstance that bring up the learning in our soul, as well as our talents, so we can evolve. And in the soul, there's a concept that I call first error, or the original attitude that was not in harmony with our spiritual nature. In Christianity, they call it original sin. But from my experience and the visions I've had, it's really not the same for everyone. We have our own brand of fear. We have our own brand of confusion. And so we're here to learn how to actualize our spiritual nature at the personality level. And that repeats, and our lessons repeat, because we have one fundamental root issue, which it's kind of like the root of a plant, where there's one big root and then it grows out from that. But we're also here to help others because we're interconnected. So the question is, when certain situations take place, what are we to learn? So the process of asking and listening I find so important, which is meditation, and then with this ability to still the brain chatter, to ask and listen, because we all have preconceived notions, which are from our childhood and from our society. And when we get to this deeper level of listening, we get deeper than our preconceived notions, which helps us to get accurate answers.
It seems to me, too, because I know this is a big bugaboo for a lot of folks, that using the TAD technique, it's not about perfecting it. It's just about using it. And there is a difference, because a lot of folks, they want to get it right every single time. They want to, it's like learning a task, you'll get to a certain level of proficiency in that task the more you do it. But it isn't about getting proficient. And this is just my perspective. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But my feeling is you just do it. Just do it.
The last chapter in my book is on the relationship between perfect and perfection. Perfect is an arrival and perfection is a process. Mm-hmm. So we're all in process. When I have my students meditate on the affirmation, I am perfect, they can't breathe. They can't move because they see that perfect is not attainable. What is attainable is a process of learning, a process of evolution, that we get it, we lose it, we have to reinstate it. It's a fluid process.
I will share with you something that I came across many years ago when I was working for the Christian radio station, and the phrase would often come up, and they were talking about perfection, being perfect, the right versus wrong, left, right, up, down, white, black, et cetera, the duality. And I did some research on that passage, and it's interesting what I came up with, and I'll ask for your perspective on this. Be ye perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect, was the passage. And I got to thinking about that, and thinking about the way it was being interpreted, and, you know, being good versus being bad. And I thought, wait a minute, even as your Father in heaven, the universe, I guess God is, right? Well, God is neither good nor bad. God just is, even in the Old Testament, you know, I am. I just am. And so when I started to look at that passage about perfection, being perfect, I thought, being perfect, even as God is perfect, just means to be.
That's a wonderful interpretation. Yes, I am.
Yeah. And so I can't in any way, shape, or form dismiss what you've said in terms of the difference between perfection and being perfect in that respect, and in terms of the process. I know, too, and I've heard it put it this way as well, that it's important for us to learn how to become part of the process and not control it. In terms of, and it, to me, this goes to, you know, being guided by the third eye.
Yes.
You know, that
because even if people try to control it, it's really an illusion. It's not controllable. Life is not. Life is like a river current, you know, and if you try to go against it, you know, it's very depleting.
And it's that trying to go against it is kind of like trying to reroute the river. And we've seen what happens in real life situations when they try to divert rivers and streams and what have you from different paths. Eventually, it goes back to the way that it was. It may take a long time, but eventually it does. Mm-hmm. And it takes the path of least resistance. But when we try to divert it, we're not taking the path of least resistance. The Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. My guest is Ellen Tadd. And by the way, the website, folks, is just that, Ellen Tadd, ELLENTADD.com. I'm curious, too, as to, now you say that you teach the Tadd technique in your presentations, or is this something that people will come in to learn the technique itself?
Well, I do private sessions, and when I do private sessions, I teach the technique. When I teach classes, I teach the technique, because it really, you know, I often say it's just a pivot away. You pivot how you focus and everything changes. So, in whatever capacity, I try to share it because it's so significant. And when our eyes are opened, quite literally focusing on a point, you know, the corner of a picture frame can be very helpful in making a decision. You know, in sports, they talk about the zone.
Mm-hmm.
And zone is deep focus and concentration. And essentially, the zone is a very activated third eye through deep focus and concentration. And athletes talk about how when they're in the zone, they're no longer attached to whether they win or lose. And they experience a kind of oneness or interconnected feeling, and they perform their very best.
Mm. As a matter of fact, when you talked about that earlier, that was the first, that was what I went through my mind, was the zone, and thinking, well, is that what she's talking about in terms of, you know, that connectedness and so forth? And I'm curious how all of this ties into finding our life's purpose.
Well, through spiritual attunement, and that 11th chapter, spiritual attunement, is aligning our conscious mind with spirit. So whether that's our inner spirit or the spiritual oneness or the guides and teachers that help us, when we attune, then we get a deeper sense of what our purpose and our lessons are. And, you know, I also talk about the relationship between destiny and choice. Some of us have what I call a general purpose. Like, it may be a purpose of focusing on creativity, or someone else may have a general purpose learning about compassion, where someone else may have a very specific purpose, like writing music for a whole generation. So it varies tremendously. And what's so important is honing in through attunement about what our particular role is in our particular life.
Ellen, Ted, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time with us and the work that you're doing, especially through the Infinite View, a guidebook for life on Earth. And we'd love to extend the invitation that should you find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio to talk to continue our conversation.
Oh, thank you. My daughter used to live in Santa Barbara, so I used to be there a lot, but now she's moved, so I don't go there so much anymore. But that's a wonderful thing to know, and I will definitely look you up if I come to Santa Barbara. Thank you.
You're welcome. The website is ellentad, ellentadd.com, ellentad.com, and I encourage you to go to her website and to check that out. And before we let you go, I have three final questions that I want to ask you that I ask all of my guests as we wrap up our time together. The first question, who is Ellen Tad?
I'm spirit temporarily on the earth. I'm a student and a teacher, and that's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
I want to expand the conversation. I want to encourage people to consider that life is more than we've been taught it is. And that we are more than we've been taught we are, that we're not just a product of our genetics and our environment, and that when we experience life in a multidimensional way, it's much richer and much more meaningful.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, there are many aspects to it, but one aspect is to remind people that they are spirit temporarily on the earth.
Ellen Tad, thank you so much for sharing so much time with us. I really appreciate it. And again, I hope we get a chance to talk further on this and many other subjects as well.
Thank you, Richard. I appreciate this opportunity.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.